Tangier Island is disappearing. The tiny community in the middle of the Chesapeake Bay is likely to be the first town that will be entirely lost to climate change as water levels rise and the island turns to marsh. Journalist and author Earl Swift spent a year living on the island and reporting its story, and his book about it, Chesapeake Requiem, A Year with the Watermen of the Vanishing Tangier Island, has since been celebrated as one of the best books of 2018 by everyone from NPR to The Washington Post. Swift is in Phoenix to speak at ASU's Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication today, and he came into our studios ahead of his talk.
It's a squiggle of mud and marsh in the middle of the Chesapeake Bay at the bay's widest point. And the bay is about 30 miles wide there, and Tangier is about 12 miles from the nearest mainland port. And it has 450 people living on it at this point, give or take. That's less than half of its one-time peak back in the 30s. And has been losing land ever since its settlement, really, during the American Revolution. But that process of land loss has accelerated over the generations, so that now the best guess is that Tangier has 20 years or so, if that, before it'll have to be abandoned.
And you said this will be the first American town that'll likely just be erased.
Full-fledged American town, yes. There are settlements in Louisiana that have faced this. There are some in southeast Alaska as well that are also staring down the barrel of rising seas. But Tangier is a town in the sense that we would think of a town, I think, in most parts of the country, with churches and a school and stores. And
it sounds like a lot of history.
A great deal of history. This is one large extended family. Everyone on Tangier can trace his or her lineage back to the first couple that showed up there in 1778. Mm. So it's not only a place with history, but it's a place with a direct connection to it. You know, it's in the blood of the place, quite literally.
And you actually went and lived there for a year or so. What was it like?
Well, I did. I started going to Tangier in 1999 as a reporter for the Virginian Pilot, the newspaper in Norfolk. And the stories that took me there always took a back seat in my conversations with islanders to the existential dilemma that they saw happening even 25 years ago. Yeah. And I eventually convinced my editors to let me go back there and live for 6 weeks on and off in 2000. I did that with a photographer, put together a big package of newspaper stories, and thought we had covered the topic pretty thoroughly. It wasn't until years later, as climate change kind of wormed its way into the American consciousness, that I realized I had just struck a glancing blow on the subject and decided to go back and see how Tangier was faring. In the meantime, in the 15 years after I had gone there in 2000, I'd owned a couple of places on the water in Norfolk, and I watched the water climb higher up my yard and higher up my basement walls with each succeeding high tide, let alone storm, and wondered, you know, if it's getting this bad on the mainland, how dire can it be on little Tangier?
How dire is it? When you talk about land loss, I mean, are we starting to see houses lost, buildings lost?
I mean, if you go back and look at maps of the place in 1850, it's almost unrecognizable. Two-thirds of it's gone. So you're not just losing buildings. Entire settlements have disappeared. And at this point, not only is the water chipping away at the periphery of the island, but it's bubbling right up. It's percolating right up through the ground and turning the place into a swamp. It's dissolving before your eyes. When I stepped back onto Tangier after 15 years in 2015, I was dumbstruck by the changes. It was profound. It was unmistakable.
So how are the people who are living there coping with this? Because like you say, this is something they've known was coming or has been happening for quite some time.
Not to get all Kubler-Ross on you, but they're going through a series of stages, and I guess they're still in the denial stage at this point. And maybe mixed with some anger as well. This is a deeply religious community. Tangier is a near theocracy of old school Methodism. And when I say old school, I mean Civil War era Methodism, Shouting Methodism. And on the one hand, they recognize that there's something big, something systemic that's occurring around them and that they're in its crosshairs. On the other hand, they can point to a number of experiences in their past that should have wiped them out. They, you know, any number of hurricanes have trundled up the bay and steered away from Tangier at the last moment. epidemics of disease have come and gone, and by all rights should have laid the place low and failed to do them in. And, you know, the fisheries have collapsed only to rebound. So Tangier looks back at those experiences and sees its salvation from them as a direct result of the prayer they've engaged in toward the moth.
Yeah.
And they've come to see themselves as an anointed people as a result. So I think that a big piece of their response to this is the belief that once again they will be spared, that there will be a divine intervention, which may take the form of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, but, you know, there will be intercession on their behalf because of the power of their prayer.
So you mentioned the Army Corps of Engineers there. What are the possibilities for the future here? Could it be saved?
It could be, with truly heroic intervention. I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in spending on a combination of seawall and elevation of the island itself. The relative sea level rise in the lower Chesapeake is among the highest on the planet. And here you have Tangier, where the highest point of land, and it's just one point, is 5 feet above sea level. Most of the island fails to clear 3 feet. Actually, most of the island fails to clear one. It's salt marsh, 80% of it.
Mm-hmm.
It has no elevation to give up.
So let's put this all into the broader picture then. I mean, this is obviously coming at a time when, like you say, the awareness, the public awareness of climate change seems to have shifted. I mean, in your mind, is this inevitable, and is this something we're going to see over and over and over again in the future?
Oh, no question. And really, that's Tangier's value as a story.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's a unique American place, which it is. It's not that it's one of the most isolated communities in America, which it also is. It's that it's the first, and it's the first of hundreds, if not thousands. We've got 88,000 miles of shoreline in this country, and none of it's going to get away from climate change. In fact, there's no part of the United States, inland or on the coast, that will get away from it. We're all going to be affected. And what Tangier's situation, what its dilemma forces us to do is to make decisions about what's important to us, because, yeah, we could spend those hundreds of millions to save the place. Some would argue that's a terrible use of government money because there are only 450 people living there. Well, if you buy into that idea and you're going to base your decision on whether to intervene on the number of heads that you have in a community, then you have to go the next step. What is the minimum number of people that a community has to have before we step in? So what we need to do, and what Tangier, I think, forces our hand on a bit, is develop a rubric for which communities we save, which we surrender, because it's pretty clear that we don't have the time, the money, or the means to save every place that's going to be threatened. And that rubric is going to be an ugly process to develop, because it will force us to decide what's important to us, what we value.
Is there any sort of advice, any sort of positive note you can end on here, or is this something you think is really dire?
Oh, I think it's extremely dire. And I wish I could be optimistic, more optimistic than I am. But the fact of the matter is that this is coming fast. I think we've been lulled into a sense of complacency to some degree because early on in kind of our growing awareness of this crisis, we were always given what to expect in terms of the year 2100. You know, by 2100, seas will be 3 or 4 feet higher. And that does this dilemma a disservice, because this is coming a lot faster than anyone foresaw back when they were talking in those terms. And even if it weren't happening faster, you know, we don't need to wait to 2100 to see some really nasty effects of this that will touch everyone.
All right. That is Earl Swift, the author of Chesapeake Requiem. Thank you so much for coming in, Earl.
Thank you.